In our next story, Lucas Laredo talks to his father for the first time about the long process of recovery after Lucas's mother passed away.
And then press enter. One come up for Chopin?
Knock.
Nocturne.
That looks more like it. Let's try. Oh, here we go. Okay. So let's see. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, it's going to make me cry. Yeah, she practiced that all the time.
That's my dad.
So my name is Carlos Laredo.
And my dad and I are really close. There was a time before my mom, Shonda, died when I didn't know Dad at all. The three of us lived together, but Dad and I were complete strangers. I was always nervous around him, and when I was a kid, I thought I'd go my entire life without us ever getting close. Part of the reason why I was so nervous was because Dad just looks intimidating. He's Cuban, and he has a wide nose and thick hands. He's got a big silver beard. His white hair is slicked back, and he always has on black Ray-Ban sunglasses, even when we take photographs. Another reason why we didn't get close was that Dad worked a lot. He got his PhD in psychology from the University of Texas in Austin, and he was always at court, or seeing a client, or meeting with attorneys, and I didn't see him. We did go out and play catch sometimes, but I remember Dad always throwing the football too hard. Growing up, Mom played piano. She was tall, 5'11", way taller than Dad, and her long fingers made it easy for her to play Debussy and Chopin. Most of what I remember about Mom comes from stories other people tell me. I've heard about the time she and my aunt flashed a Coast Guard helicopter at the beach, and my neighbor says that she could hear my mom laugh all the way across the street. I do remember her reading Dr. Seuss and Shel Silverstein to me every night before bed. And I do remember that for her, I was what made the world spin. Years later, after the motorcycle trip, Dad and I would get very close. During my childhood, though, we weren't.
Yeah, with you being real close to Mom, and because there was a time I remember Shonda saying, like, you were scared to talk to me, and it's like, why the f*** is that? And it's like, maybe how my voice sounded, or Dad, or it was easier talking to her because y'all talked all the time.
Lots of things about my mom were kept from me. She struggled with depression and anxiety for a long time, and when her dad died when I was 7, she started taking medication for panic attacks and bipolar disorder. Eventually, the medication made her fingers slow, like they were pulling through honey. And I remember her sitting at the piano cussing because she couldn't play anymore. I was 10 when Mom started nursing school. The plan was get a degree, start working, and Dad can cut back from work and ease into retirement. I think, too, my parents thought that if Mom had a goal to focus on, she might get better. After graduating from nursing school, she started working the night shift at the neonatal intensive care unit.
I think it was some months, I don't remember. But that was, she was on a night shift, and then she quit because she was having too many hallucinations at work.
Did she tell you what they were?
Pretty crazy. I don't remember. Some of them I remember. I don't particularly feel like talking about some of them. Some of them were real scary. I was scared what she might do to herself, or what she might do with you or to you if she were in a car.
Do you think that she would have ever wrecked the car if her and I were in it?
I knew that her real self would never do that or come close to it, but she was pretty desperate to get out of what she was feeling. It was real scary at the end.
What did you think was going to happen? I mean, where did you see it?
Nothing good. Nothing good.
So what do you, I mean, what do you do?
You worry a lot. You talk to lots of people. You fret. You try to protect. And it's pretty scary feeling, actually.
It was that last year mostly where everything was going to hell, kind of?
Just more often to hell and more often to worse hell. So, yeah, it just got progressively worse for Mom. It's like, you know, it's going to end bad. You just don't have no control over it. You know, it's going to suck and you just can't stop it.
I was 11 then, and I didn't know Mom was having panic attacks or hallucinating, or that she might have been a danger to me or herself. I didn't realize that Dad was worried, and I didn't realize how hard Dad fought to make her better.
I remember her saying, "I'm such a bad wife, you'd be better off without me," and told her, "Well, you know, I'm not running away, so if you go down, I'm going down with you."
When you said that, were you prepared to go down with her?
I wasn't going to give up. So, yeah.
You must have loved her like crazy.
Yeah, I did.
Working at the neonatal intensive care unit changed my mom. Every morning when she came home, she was a little less mom and a little more animal. The night was turning her into something I didn't recognize, something dangerous and unpredictable, something like a werewolf. In the movies, a werewolf turns back into a human in the morning, but Mom never did change back. In October of 2002, 1 year after she started the night shift, Mom started having chest pains and difficulty breathing. A couple days later, on October 3rd, she passed away in the bathtub from a blood clot in her lung. I was homesick that day, and so I saw everything. I was 12. It was violent and fast. Faster than I would have thought, and loud.
Just, you know, I was worried about her and just wanted to comfort her and stuff, so, you know, I got up, she was taking a bath, and I went and watered and came back in, checked on her, and she was gray and said she couldn't breathe, and I went to her and...
I remember the way you said her name. Shonda, Shonda, just in this way that I knew.
Yeah.
It was like the world was ending or something.
Yeah.
Dad lifted Mom from the tub and laid her on the floor. I was on the phone with the 911 operator, and since Dad didn't know CPR, I had to have the operator help me guide him through it. Dad tried to bring Mom back until the paramedics came. Our family friend came to pick us up in his dark green convertible, and he drove fast. We turned left through a red light, and as we made the corner, we were almost hit. I remember the oncoming car bearing down on my window, but I didn't care. I felt like I was watching an actor on a stage, playing out my life from far away. So the doctor called you out, and what did he say?
They kind of soft-pedaled it, and it's like, you know, we did everything we could, and we just couldn't bring her back. I'm sorry. You want to spend some time with her, whatever they say, you know? I mean, I already knew what he was going to say.
What did it feel like when he said it?
Shell-shocked, basically. It's like, I mean, I know she died, but it's like it just didn't register. It's kind of like football games where, you know, you just put it all out on the line and, you know, and then some, and then you lose, and then you're just sitting there numb.
You had given it everything you had.
Yep. Yep.
When they called Dad out into the hallway, I remember looking out the window and seeing people walk by, and I thought, how weird that today my life is ending and theirs isn't. When Dad came in, he told me, "I have bad news," and that was it. And that was it. I was 12 when Mom died. Dad was 52. People brought food and came by to tell us how sorry they were, and there was a lot of stimulus. But after a while, people stopped showing up. And eventually it was just me and Dad. Me and this person I'd always been nervous around. Me and this stranger. And we're it. We are what's left.
So you're here, mom's gone, and you're left with this kid.
Well, then I can't work because I'm just too emotionally distraught. And, you know, as you know, I was pretty depressed and pretty removed, and, you know, that didn't help your situation at all.
Did you feel...
Bad. Bad. I wasn't doing any better than I was, and, you know, it's like I couldn't even remember how to cook.
Mom wasn't there to play music anymore, and I remember how still and dark the house was. I tried to take care of Dad. I always comforted him when he was sad. Sometimes I put my ear against his door and heard him crying alone in his room. For myself, I cried on the day Mom died and a couple days after that. Then I did not cry, not once, for years. I felt like there was only space for one person to be sad in the house, and that person was not me. I didn't know it at the time, but I was angry. I felt cheated that Dad could cry and I couldn't, and I felt abandoned. Dad couldn't take care of me. When Mom died, I didn't lose one parent. I lost two. Things would end up getting better, but for a year and a half, every day was the same. I would go to school, work hard, then come home and enter into our quiet house. I would go straight to my room and get on my computer. Dad would call me into the kitchen to get dinner. I remember taco nights a lot. And I'd get my plate, and Dad would get his, and I would say, "Is it okay if I eat in my room?" And he would say, "Yeah." And Dad would take his plate to the living room and watch television, and I'd take my plate to my room and shut the door. At night, my mind would run, and I would think terrible thoughts about Dad. I'd lie awake and wish I still had Mom, my best friend, and not this stranger named Dad. And I could hear the hum of the television in the living room, mixed with the sounds of Dad crying coming from under my bedroom door. And every night I felt a little less human, and a little more like something else. Something animal, something dark, something like a werewolf. Dad used to ride motorcycles when he was a young psychologist, so for his 53rd birthday, me and my half-brother Juan Carlos split the cost of a 24-hour Harley rental. I don't know Juan Carlos well because he grew up with his mom, but it was his idea. It was something me and Dad could do together, just the two of us, and I think Juan Carlos was trying to help us get close. As the trip approached, it seemed to gain more weight. I needed Dad to snap out of it. I was too exhausted to take care of him anymore, and I thought this motorcycle trip might somehow give me a sign that he could take care of himself. We went to the Harley rental store in Round Rock, 30 minutes north of Austin. The bike we got was a cruiser with a streak of powder blue paint down the side. It had a backrest, which they call a sissy bar, and saddlebags for storage. Dad drove the Harley back to the house that night so we could get an early start in the morning. I went back with a family friend. It was the first time Dad had ridden a motorcycle in 20 years.
You know, like, you know what Harleys sound like when you ride them and you give the throttle, you know, you goose it. It's such a nice sound, you know. And such a nice feeling, and then you put it in gear, it engages, you give it the throttle and you go. It's like,
what does it feel like?
Freedom, kind of free, you know, free.
The next morning we packed water and nectarines in the saddlebags. I was excited, but scared. Dad was on medication then, and he always had this cloudy look in his eyes like his mind was somewhere else. There were days when he drove me to school and the car would get really close to the curb and I thought for sure we would crash. I don't think Dad ever knew anything about it. And I'm about to get on the 2,000-pound machine with this guy and I don't trust that he can keep me safe. I climbed on the back of the motorcycle and brought my arms around Dad's stomach. Dad and I hadn't been this close physically ever and it felt weird. But when you're on a motorcycle, you have no choice, and so I held on. We rode through the Texas Hill Country. It was a spring day, cool enough, and the sky was big and open. We rode south from Austin on a road called the Devil's Backbone that overlooks Canyon Lake. We came down out of the hills and rode next to the blue-green water of the Guadalupe River.
And it's kind of a curvy road, and then when you get to River Road, it's just like Oh, man, because it's cooler there also.
Because of the trees?
Yeah, well, you're right next to the water, and you have all these huge cypress trees that shade the road, and they line the road.
And people dotted the river in inner tubes. And this is Texas, so there are two tubes per person, one for them and one for their coolers of beer. I loosened up a little. I let myself rest back against the sissy bar and took it all in. One thing about being on a motorcycle is that it's so open. There's no metal around you, no windows, nothing. And all the people in their inner tubes waved to us, and we waved back, and I let my grip around Dad's back relax. I was getting more comfortable, and I wasn't as afraid. I was having fun.
We went to the end, and I said, well, there's a way to get to Green, Texas, and all of that, and then we rode across that low water bridge.
I remember that.
And then we ended up at that little restaurant, hamburger joint, right by the river.
What was the hamburger joint like?
Nothing, you know. No kind of hamburger joint, but, you know, we were eating and sitting by the water, and I remember feeling, you know. The good thing is I know that I was coming out of my hole because I was enjoying myself. You know, it's like, cool. I can laugh again. I can enjoy things again. And I can have fun with my son. Look what a great time we're having. Isn't this cool?
By the time we finished eating and got back on the road, it was dark, rush hour. We rode through the cypress trees and waved at the leftover tubers as we crossed back over the low water bridge. We got back on the highway, and it was busy, and it was dangerous. I was nervous again, because cars kept cutting in front of us, so I hugged Dad's back tighter.
So they kept coming into our lane?
Yeah, twice, and like, so from New Braunfels, which is, what, 50 miles from Austin? So in 50 miles, we almost got run over twice.
I remember you putting your boot out.
Is that right?
Getting ready to kick off the car.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that.
That image is burned in my brain because it was like I'm on the back of this huge ass motorcycle and we're about to get run over and there was nothing I could do about it.
Yeah.
There was nothing I could do, and the only thing I could do is just trust you knew what you were doing and that you'd, you know, protect us. I think that's why it sticks in my brain so much, because it was like I had no control, and for so long I had felt like I was taking care of you, and we were riding back on the motorcycle, and it was kind of this moment of like, well, maybe this guy can take care of me too. There is a division in my brain. There is before the motorcycle trip and after the motorcycle trip. Before, I was the caretaker. And it took a long time for me to get close to Dad, to trust him. But the motorcycle trip was the beginning of that trust. And after it, things got better. Talking to Dad these last few weeks has been really hard. I wanted to understand how I came to trust Dad, but what kept coming up is that I never knew how much Dad fought for Mom. When I transcribed our interview, I kept tearing up, and I can't get over it. I mean, what kind of love would it take to look your partner in the eyes as she slowly sinks away and say to that person that no matter what, you will be there? And that's what my dad did. He looked at my mom, the woman he loved, and he said he would go down with her. And he did. And then he came out again.
And you and I have, you know, my dream came through. You believe it?
What was your dream?
I told you, buddy.
I know, remind me.
It's that I'd have the best, closest relationship with a child. And if it were a son, it would be like icing on the cake. And I have that. So it's like, couldn't be better. Couldn't be better.
The effect of those 2 years after Mom died lasted 8 more. And it's only now, 10 years after her death, that I feel like I'm becoming human again. The process has been slow and it's been hard. but now it feels like those nights lying awake happened in another life. I can feel the moon going away, and I can feel that the werewolf in me is finally leaving for good.
That story, River Road, was written and produced by Lucas Laredo, who graduated from Stanford in 2012.